inspect them properly. Apart from the twin dark holes, they were flawless. Their faces were catalogue model perfect, rich with a serene plastic beauty. Their bodies were lightly muscled and well proportioned. Their suits fascinated her, each a lethally precise evocation of a past in which she was small and powerless. It occurred to her that she'd barely ever heard a pressure man speak. She wondered why they were so nearly mute. Perhaps Diodatus's concerns were so clearly defined and non-negotiable that they had no reason to trade words with anyone else. And yet, her brother had forced him into a negotiation and had won considerable wealth for her. For a moment, she wondered what Diodatus needed him for. But that was a distraction. "I'm here for Cassiel," she reminded herself, glancing around the rest of the room. The sofa and chairs had been pushed back to make space for a black half-globe, a couple of meters round, that glowed from within with purple light. It was the source of the buzzing. Black flecks zigzagged in the air. The flies were everywhere. Leela readied herself for an instant jump back to the coffin drives, then cautiously opened up the ghost cloak a little. Her social senses snapped into action, telling her that Cassiel was present. They told her nothing about the pressure men. It was as if they didn't exist. She told the cloak to let the mind perceive her presence, then said, "Cassiel." One of the pressure men stirred lightly. "Fuck," she gasped, closing herself back down again. She wasn't sure what to do next. She moved towards the globe. Its skin resolved into a black swarm, a scurry of scratching legs, dirt-flecked wings and hard, unmoving compound eyes. The flies didn't seem to notice her. The pressure men stayed immobile. She opened herself up again, then once more whispered, "Cassiel." She glanced nervously over at the pressure men. This time, there was no response. She sighed with relief. Then Cassiel spoke. Her voice was faint. "Leela," she croaked feebly, "is that you out there?" "Yes, with two pressure men, unconscious, and one of the boxes that killed Data. They must have switched fully into their swarm." Cassiel's voice was so quiet it barely penetrated the swarm's low hum. "The flies are running a massive, coordinated intrusion attack on me. My defenses are working them hard, but they won't last for much longer."
"That's not a problem. I'm going to get you out of here."
"Oh."
It was a sound as much as a word, a weak shudder made audible.
"Well, that's very laudable, but I can't rescue myself, so I really don't think you'll have much luck."
"Good grief, Cassiel, have some faith at least."
Leela wondered if there was enough fly spray to break the whole swarm. She imagined it stopping only some of the flies, and then the rest would realize she was there and try to attack her. Perhaps they'd succeed. She was potentially far more vulnerable to them than they were to her. And then there would be the pressure men to deal with. Her skull face lurked in her mind. It had only slowed her Shining City attackers, and it was a unique weapon. Deploying it now would let Diodatus know she'd survive their attempt to rewrite her memory. Dit's work would be rendered useless. She peered at the half-globe, wondering if she could somehow just reach through it. But that was impossible.
"Are you still there?"
asked Cassiel.
"Are you planning to leave? I think you should."
That stung.
"Of course not. I'm working out how to help you."
"It'd be the smart thing to do. I can give you totality contacts, but you'll have to be careful."
There was a pause. When Cassiel spoke again, There was real pain in her voice.
Some of them might have been compromised.
I'm going to get you out of there, Cassiel. And then you're going to help me get Dieter back. She readied the fly spray.
I have to say,
continued Cassiel, ignoring her,
I always hoped for a more dignified end than this.
She sounded like she was trying to cheer herself up.
Devoured by flies. It's not good.
Stop it, Leela told her. You're not going to die. She double-checked that she was ready to leap back to the coffin drives. I've already escaped a fly attack once. She popped the cap off the fly spray. I think I can crash them. If I do, can you stand up to the pressure men?
Of course,
croaked Cassiel. Leela sighed.
But I can't touch the flies,
she continued.
And I'm much better equipped than you are. I can only hold them off, and that for not much longer. You really should put yourself first and leave. I've had a very rich life. I won't break any hearts by passing away just now. If this is it, well, there it is.
Don't be such a bloody pessimist, Leela told her. Then, sending a silent prayer of hope down to the caretaker, she squeezed down and started to spray. A cone of brilliant iridescent light flared out from the can, dazzling in its multicolored intensity. Leela played it back and forth across the swarm, making sure that as many as possible were hit. It ran at peak brightness for a few seconds, then sputtered and started to die out. A few final brilliant flashes, and then there was nothing. The spray can feeling light and empty in Leela's hand. The flies were apparently untouched. The pressure men didn't move. Damn it, grumbled Leela. Never trust a hippie.
Was that it? Asked Cassiel.
Leela grunted.
Perhaps now you'll believe me. I'm just being realistic. When they do get through my shields, I'm going to trigger a low-level self-destruct. Hopefully take a few of them with me. On the plus side, at least your rescue attempt wasn't effective enough to alert the swarm to your presence.
Frustrated, Leela threw the spray can at the flies. She expected it to just bounce off them and roll away. Instead, it disappeared. A burst of white light flared up, then vanished. A blast of data leapt out into the weave and was gone, moving far too quickly for Leela to scan. And then, fly by fly, the swarm started to rise up. Oh, no, she said, moving back. I think I might have just alerted them, after all. She readied herself for a sudden jump. She hated the thought of leaving Cassiel, but she couldn't see what else to do.
Well, thanks for trying, said Cassiel. I hate to say it, but I did tell you so.
It's not over yet, Cassiel. Perhaps she should risk the skull face after all.
I'll send you my contacts. Then you should go.
Leela glanced over at the pressure men, expecting to see them waking, but they hadn't moved. Their overlay flickered, tasteful antique suits leaping suddenly to monochrome, then back again. There was a burst of visual static. For a moment, they were just pale, speckled silhouettes. It looked like their virtual systems were crashing. Back in the Shining City, the spray had only affected the flies. Either it was more powerful here, or the pressure men were more vulnerable. Relief filled Leela. Now, that's promising, she said. Looking back, she saw that the swarm, too, was broken. The flies veered round the room in jagged, apparently random zigzags. There was no coherence to their movement. Cassiel was visible, kneeling unclothed inside a softly glowing purple dome. She raised her head.
My, my, she said. You did it.
I did tell you so,
Now let's get out of here.
There was a light pattering. The flies had started to freeze in mid-flight, falling like raindrops made of black dust.
Defending myself took a lot out of me, replied Cassiel. I won't be moving quickly.
The purple dome vanished. Her nanogel flickered like a dying candle. Crashed flies bounced off her. She shifted, moving slowly and painfully.
Gods, they hit you hard. How would you have handled the pressure men like that?
I didn't think I'd have to, replied Cassiel. You've done well. And you're hiding yourself surprisingly effectively.
She almost sounded impressed.
Running on non-standard weave strata?
It's the ghost cloak Dieter built for the Fetch Communion, explained Leela.
Ah, you're pretending to be a fridge.
Something like that. Cassiel stood. Only one of her arms seemed to be working properly.
Where did you find the tool that crashed the flies? She asked.
There was no time to describe the caretaker or the shining city. Leela settled for a friend. Urgency gripped her. It might not last long. Let's go. A thought struck her. Do you need any clothes? Cassiel shook her head.
They're an affectation. Help humans relate to us. Just get in the way now.
Then she grunted with effort and took her first step. It wasn't a success. She half fell, slumping loosely against the wall. That was when she saw the pressure men.
Oh,
she said, shocked.
No.
Leela followed her gaze.
Cassiel, she said. I'm so sorry.
The overlay had completely fallen away from them. Now their true selves were revealed. They were both minds, but they no longer belonged to the totality.
Their bodies were speckled through with small black dots and decay had spread across their skin. So many flies, whispered Cassiel. So deeply embedded.
Underneath the pressure men, said Leela. Minds that have fallen to Diodatus. There was a muddied shine to the two fallen minds, very different from the stained glass purity of Cassiel's glow. Both were pockmarked with blisters, craters, and bruises, and both had one of the wooden boxes set into the lower part of their chests. White wriggled within them. They stank of decay.
Gods, breathed Leela, sickened.
They must have had the box ready to install in you.
Nanogel is part organic, said Cassiel. They must let it rot to feed the flies.
She sounded disgusted.
No wonder I could never catch them. The flies consume minds. They are my kin. They anticipated every move I'd ever make.
One of the fallen minds twitched. Let's go, hissed Leela urgently. Cassiel moved with a limping stagger. One leg dragged behind her. Chitin crunched beneath her feet.
If they wake, she grunted, I could probably neutralize one of them, maybe both.
Let's not hang around and find out, eh? Cassiel reached down and picked up the box. A thin skin of nanogel poured out of her fingers and flowed around it.
For study, she said.
Are you sure that's safe?
I'm isolating it.
She held it up.
Coating it with an inert layer.
The nanogel turned dark. The box was invisible.
Now we can go.
Cassiel's slow progress was an agony. Leela hovered around her as she inched out of the apartment, desperate to help and yet completely unable to do so. Cassiel moved in silence, swearing occasionally as she stumbled or half fell. They just pushed through the front door and reached the stairs when there was a loud crash behind them. Looking back, they saw the first of the pressure men staggering towards them, its overlay still down.
Oh, fuck, said Leela. I can zap them with my skull face, but then they'll know I'm here.
The limitations of anonymity were starting to frustrate her.
I'll take them, Cassiel told her. It's what I do.
Then, before Leela could reply, she leant forward and let herself fall, curling herself up as she went. Her back bent more than a human's could. She half slid, half rolled down the stairs, barely in control, then bumped onto the landing and lay splayed out for a moment. Then she groaned, pushed herself up on all fours, crawled forwards, and disappeared down the next flight. Leela glanced back. Both fallen minds were in the passage. They were more frightening without overlay. Their blotched, empty faces stared hungrily past her. One reached an arm out, pointing towards the stairs. The other one grunted. They sped up. Leela jumped to the bottom of the stairs. Cassiel had just managed to stand up. The mind pushed the door open and half fell into the street. In the sky, the twins were fishing, their giant forms towering over the sleeping city.
"I'll take them here,"
Cassiel said, propping the door open with the sealed-up box. The camera nest above it looked down at them.
"One at a time. As they come through."
She looked at Leela.
"You said you escaped a fly attack?"
"Yes. They tried to rewrite my memory. There wasn't time to explain, did. But I was running a buffer self. They attacked that instead. They think they've neutralized me."
"Best to keep it that way."
Cassiel nodded towards the stairs.
"Whatever happens, stay back."
"Do you really have to fight?" Cassiel couldn't answer because the first fallen mind was on her. He came rolling through the door and uncurled to stand, stumbling a little as he turned to face Cassiel. The mind was suddenly a blur, moving with him, one hand at his wrist and the other at his chin. As she spun him, she pulled his arm out and pushed his head back. His plastic body bent, but not quickly enough, and he fell backwards, landing with a wet thump on the hard pavement. Cassiel sank with him, moving to straddle him, both hands pushing into the black oval of his face. They vanished up the wrist. His body shook, arms and legs thrashing. Cassiel pulled her hands out. A moment, then his head lost all form and collapsed into a dirty purple puddle. The stump of his neck bled dirty nanogel. The body was still.
"Fuck,"
gasped Leela, both surprised and profoundly impressed. The second mind appeared at the door, moving as quickly as the first one. This time, Cassiel didn't have the advantage of surprise. She tried to spin to the right. She was exhausted. The movement was slow and awkward. The second fallen mind threw himself forward. She grabbed for his wrist and started to spin, trying to throw him over her head. But she missed and he was on her. His momentum threw her backwards and he was kneeling over her, his hands almost touching her face. Almost, but not quite, for she'd grabbed both his wrists and was holding him off. Her body shook with strain. Running footsteps echoed in the night. Leela glanced up the street, a silhouette rushing towards them.
Shit, another one!
There was no choice. She targeted the skull face on the mind attacking Cassiel and prepared to fire it. A private message howled into her mind.
Just go!
No, she shot back, hoping to break Cassiel's attacker before their new adversary reached them. But he was almost on them. Leela spun, ready to switch her attack to him, but it wasn't a fallen mind.
"You!"
she gasped, staggered. "What are you doing here?" Of course the caretaker didn't hear her. He shot right past her, converting his momentum into an almighty kick that took Cassiel's attacker in the middle of its chest, lifting it right off her and into the air beyond. Chapter 18. The fallen mine crashed back down into the street. The caretaker landed beyond Cassiel, then sunk down, smashing his knees into the mine's chest. It shook feebly, arms and legs flailing, while he splashed it with the liquid from a little metal container. A flame flared from a lighter in his hand. He touched it to the mine, then stepped up and back. Fire leapt across the mine. It shuddered and tried to roll. Then the flames had all of it and it lay still.
"Job done," said the caretaker,
as he dropped the lighter and its fuel canister back into his pocket.
"You all right?" he asked Cassiel.
She grunted.
"There's someone else here too, isn't there?"
Leela let him see her.
"We're going now,"
he said, already helping Cassiel up.
How did you know I was there? How did you even find us?
I had a message from a spray can.
Questions pulsed in Leela's mind, but the caretaker was right. They needed to get moving. She looked round, orientating herself, as he slipped an arm under Cassiel's shoulder and pulled her to her feet.
Lighter than she looks, he commented,
shrugging himself into a support position.
Right, good to go. We're safe.
Cassiel was trying to say something. She forced words out.
Surveillance. The Rose will be watching.
She nodded at the camera nest over the door.
I can fix it.
The caretaker took her to stand beneath it. She reached up, her arm elongating. For a moment, her hand became a mass of nanogel wrapped around the nest. Lightning shimmered within it.
Dropped a virus. Intercepts all local images of us. No recording. Invisible.
Her arm fell back down, and she slumped against the caretaker, completely exhausted.
Over to you, Leela,
she muttered.
Hide us. Don't forget the box.
Leela nodded, and the caretaker squatted down to pick up the box, grunting as Cassiel's weight moved against him.
Home's not safe, said Leela, as he stood up again. She remembered standing before Ambrose, racking her brains for somewhere to hide together.
The apartment block she'd shown to the awful couple would most likely still be empty.
There's somewhere a few minutes away. Nobody'll find us.
When they reached the block, Leela called up the cuttlefish. It made short work of the block's security systems, reprogramming them to give Leela full access and lock anyone else out until she'd been alerted to their presence. As the caretaker carried Cassiel up the block's staircase, Leela thought back to the last time she'd been in it. Her life had changed so radically since then. It was almost like accessing someone else's memories. Then she thought of Lee and shivered. They installed themselves in one of the top floor flats, its windows facing the back of the building.
Invisible from the street, noted Leela.
She had the cuttlefish lock the block off from the weave.
I can use the block's weave servers to manifest, but nobody outside can see any of us.
Smart move, wheezed the caretaker.
He carried Cassiel into a bedroom, settled her onto a mattress and staggered off towards the kitchen.
Drink of water, he gasped.
Leela stayed with Cassiel.
She spoke in a cracked whisper, her words slurred with exhaustion.
Deodatus's corruption is so much worse than I thought, she told Leela. Those flies, riding the fallen mines. They very nearly broke through my defenses. That takes deep technical knowledge of our most secret procedures. And the fallen mines defended themselves too well against me. I thought they were human until their overlay crashed. The rot has gone deep.
I'm sorry, said Leela, feeling inadequate.
There was so much pain in Cassiel's voice. The mind held up the dark globe containing the box.
At least we recovered this. Must dissect it.
Her hand shook. The tremor spread through her. But not right now, Leela told her gently.
You've got to heal.
Yes, muttered the mind.
She put the globe down on the floor next to the bed, the shaking dying away as she let go of it.
I will sleep, she continued, and rebuild.
With that, she drifted off. Leela settled her more comfortably on the mattress, then held her hand as unconsciousness took her. She stayed with the mind for a few minutes, watching her sink into a deep and hopefully restorative sleep mode, then went to find the caretaker. He was standing at the living room window, staring out into Docklands, a mug in one hand and a hand-rolled joint in the other. Spears of dawn light filled the room.
illuminating his thoughtful expression. He drew hard on the joint. Its tip flared red, then darkened again. He waited for a few seconds, then exhaled out of the window.
"Thank you for helping me again," Leela said, "for helping us."
He turned to face her.
"My pleasure, I guess."
"But who are you?"
"Mind if I smoke this in here?"
"I don't have lungs," smiled Leela. "Neither does Cassiel."
"I suppose not. Thank you."
He moved slowly and deliberately to an armchair, then sank carefully into it, balancing the mug on one arm.
"Good to take the weight off," he sighed.
Then he said,
"And as for who I am, well, I was hoping you could tell me."
"What?"
"It's a very good question."
He held the joint up and peered at it.
"Found some weed in my pocket. Thought I'd skin up. Bring myself down after all the excitement. Maybe jog some memories."
He shrugged.
"Nothing yet. Don't know who I am. Don't know who you are. Found myself in a street somewhere. Got a message. Said it was from a can of fly spray. Told me you were in danger. I thought, well, if someone needs help, who cares about the messenger?"
Leela sat down. "Shit. The pressure man must have got to you."
"Pressure man?" He exhaled. "Who are they?"
"The people attacking us."
"Ah, those dudes. The fucked up versions of Cassiel."
"Yes, they can rewrite memories. They must have wiped yours. Is there anything left? Do you remember the first time we met?"
"What, just now?" he chuckled. "Of course. I'm not that screwed up."
"No, it was somewhere else. Somewhere far away and very old." Leela talked him through everything that had happened since Dieter's death. He smoked his joint down as she talked, nodding along. His round glasses flashed as he took it all in. "Ring any bells?" she said at last.
"Nope."
He still seemed very relaxed about it all.
"What about your weave self? Are there any externally stored memories?" "Worth a try."
He tipped his head. A few moments of silence, then,
"Nothing useful. Just weaveware update requests."
He paused again.
"Lots of them. The gods are a bit pissed off with me."
He smiled.
"I don't strike myself as the kind of person who'd care much about that."
Leela smiled. "I'd have to agree with you there." The caretaker nodded and took another drawer in his joint. "Is that helping at all?" asked Leela.
"The mood, but not the memory."
He smiled again.
"Could be worse."
He pulled his thoughts into focus.
"So, what next?"
"I'll get in touch with the fetch counselor. See if we can get the names of the next two Deodatus victims from Ambrose's fetch. Use them to get on his trail and work out where the Shining City is. Then we'll go back there and get Dieter out."
"What about mopping up Deodatus and the pressure men? They're pretty scary guys."
Leela sighed.
"I can't take them on. That's a job for Cassiel and the totality. Maybe the fetch counselor. Maybe even the Pantheon, if we can find one of them that hasn't fallen and isn't totally useless." "Pretty big job."
"Yeah," nodded Leela. "I don't want to think about that too much. I just want Dieter back."
"Fair enough. Blood's thicker than water."
The caretaker went to fist bump her.
"What about me? I should probably try and work out who I am."
"You called yourself the caretaker," Leela told him.
"Hey, well, that's not a bad name. The caretaker. The guy who takes care of things. I think I'll be that for the moment."
Leela smiled. "Okay, caretaker, we'll call you that. And we know one other thing. You're pretty handy with a lighter and a broom, too." The caretaker chuckled.
"Improvising with what's at hand."
he thought for a moment. You know, I guess I must have been checking them out. Maybe they wiped my memory because I found something important. Or maybe you just scared them. When I met you in the Shining City, you seemed to know who the pressure men were, where they came from, and how to handle them. Looks like I need to get back down there, too. He took a long, final draw on his joint. The tip fled down to the roach and then burnt out. Might remember who I am. And in the meantime, well, I've kicked the crap out of the bad guys, helped rescue Cassiel, and I'm well supplied with excellent weed. I think I might just approve of myself. Chapter 19. Leela walked briskly up a little road of red brick, two-story terraced houses. Being in the coffin drives again filled her with low, grumbling fear. The fetch counselor had replied to her update with a message summoning her back. Come to the channel of the quiet dead, it said. We'll be talking to Ambrose. Leela wanted to believe that was possible. But the very mundane feel of the neighborhood didn't help her believe in miracles. On the plus side, at least it soothed her a little. A glorious sunset smeared the sky with reds and oranges. A man in shirt sleeves, braces and a flat hat waved a cheery hello as he trundled a hand mower across his front lawn. Through front windows, Leela saw couple after couple sitting quietly down to supper, televisions flickering alongside them. A low susurrus of engine noises rose up from somewhere near, implying a busy main road. The vetch counselor was standing in front of one of the houses, checking her watch. The counselor's dark eyes looked out from a blonde in her late 30s, dressed in a heavy overcoat and carrying a large, glossy handbag. When Leela reached her, she said, "You're late. I was worried. I got lost. The channel of the quiet dead is a hard place to find," the counselor smiled. "On purpose." "What is it exactly?" "Just what it says. It's where people who want peace and stability come. An eternity of quiet Friday nights, Saturday mornings with the kids playing in the garden. Sunday afternoons dozing after a good roast lunch." She gestured at the quiet street. "Of this." "What about the traffic? That sounds pretty busy." The counselor smiled. "The main road. You can walk here forever, but you'll never reach it. It's an oral representation of all of the rest of the Coffin Drive's traffic, on all the other channels. Apparently, one only really appreciates peace if there's a little disturbance to compare it with." Leela snorted. "Don't be so dismissive," chided the counselor. "Think of a quiet day. You only know how quiet it really is when there's a little tiny fly making its tiny little buzz breaking the peace." Leela shuddered. "I don't want to think about flies. Let's go in. Of course, I'm sorry. And before we knock on Mr. Meeker's door, I've got some good news and some bad news. No flies, I promise. Which first?" "Bad news. The gods have been asking after you. The Rose, East, even Grey. I told you about East. She wants to turn me into a reality star. I said she should leave you alone for a bit, that you were still mourning your brother. I promised I'd ask you to think about her offer. She seemed happy enough with that." "That's a surprise. She's usually so pushy. What about Grey?" "Oh, he was just very vague. You know how he's been since his new board took over? All those teenagers. It's much harder to rid him." "They saved him from Kingdom," Leela sighed. "Let's hope they've saved him from the pressure men, too. And if they can't, well, there's not much we can do about it. The Rose, though. That's serious. What did she want? She knows all about last night's little adventure. Though she doesn't seem to know that you were involved." "The ghost cloak worked, thank you." "Yes, but Rose knows exactly how Cassiel spoofed the weave cams. She's watching out for it. If Cassiel tries it again, she's got maybe half an hour before the Rose spots it, cracks her security and locates her.
It's a one-shot weapon now.
Shit.
The counselor smiled. She's pretty furious about it all, ranting about viral attacks, terrorism, the usual. She managed to recover a couple of images of Cassiel and the caretaker, and she's scouring station for them, telling everyone that the caretaker's an anti-totality extremist, that he anonymized himself by wiping his own weave self, that two of her operatives tried to stop him kidnapping Cassiel but couldn't.
She's claiming the pressure men as her own.
Yes, the way she's playing it. I'm pretty sure she's either working with or for Diodatus. And it gets worse. She's had me supply location data on potentially implicated fetches, checking alibis. What's the problem with that?
It was a short list. You were on it.
What did you tell her? Fear gripped Leela. The ghost cloak made her location unreadable. That in itself was suspicious. She imagined the Rose demanding an immediate interview. Did you cover for me?
The counselor laughed.
No need to. You were at home, entertaining yourself with one of East's drummers.
What?
But that would be impossible to fake. Not fake at all. This is the good news. There are two of you.
Oh, shit. Lee.
The counselor laughed. I have to admit, Dit has been very effective. He's letting her run at pretty high capacity. She convinced the Rose.
Leela imagined another self out there, usurping her life.
I can't believe he's done that. Gods!
The counselor put a hand on Leela's arm. Don't shout. Not here.
Leela ran a hand through her hair. I'm sorry, but this is crazy.
The gods think that Lee is you, so you're safe. For the moment, that is. There is a problem, though. If she just sits at home doing nothing, it won't take long for them to realize they've been duped.
What?
Lee's a young, single woman. She's just become incredibly rich. The last thing she'd do is spend all day indoors catching up on the subs. She's got to be out and about, living her life.
Living my life.
It's the only way to keep the Rose off your back. The rest of them, too, if they start digging around.
No, that's too much.
She's been your shield once, and she did a great job. Let her keep doing that for you.
Leela sighed. I hate the thought of it.
I'm sure you'll make the right decision. And I'll watch the Rose and the rest of them. See if anyone else has fallen. When we know exactly what's going on and who can help us, we'll act. And right now, Ambrose will help us find out who Diodatus are targeting next.
Is that all we can ask him about?
The way this works, long conversations are impossible. You just get fragments.
Well, fingers crossed. And there's nobody else who can help us. Hardly anyone even knows about this stuff.
Dieter used to rant about how apathetic most station citizens were, how short-sighted they were not to be more curious about their own history. She was beginning to feel quite a lot of sympathy for him. The only other person I can think of is Cormac Redonda, and he's ghosted himself out.
I've already tried him, the counselor sighed. Didn't go very well.
You know where he is?
I know where every fetch is, Leela. He locked himself away in an old Florytown restaurant on Virgil Street. His little boy had a birthday party there just before the end. I went and pulled him out of his fugue. But he's a broken man. He can't face reality. He refused to help us.
Shit.
But hopefully Ambrose will be more helpful. Let's go and find him.
The counselor pushed open a little garden gate and led the way up a narrow gravel path past a neatly trimmed little lawn and flowerbed.
Leela followed her, feeling a little suffocated both by the neighborhood and the thought of another self living her life for her.
The counselor gave the front door a sharp knock. A short, stout woman in late middle age opened it.
Ah, Miss Limpstone, said the counselor. It's good to see you.
Miss Limpstone beamed out a welcome, floating them through the hallway and into the front room on a gushed wave of sentences.
Oh, hello. Do come in. Please do come in. May I take your coat? Mr. Mika will be home soon. I'm terribly sorry. He's been held up at the bowls club. Please, come through here. Do please sit down.
The room was empty but for a mahogany dining table with four matching chairs and a small cupboard topped by a little gramophone. Miss Limpstone only slowed when another woman appeared in the door.
Oh, and here's Mrs. Mika to welcome you. I'll make the tea.
She bustled out of the room. Mrs. Mika was a slender woman, about the same age as Miss Limpstone, with a tight little face and hair pulled sharply back into a bun. She stared disapprovingly at the two guests.
They shouldn't be going out there again, she said. Not at the moment.
Mrs. Mika, replied the councillor, I'm so sorry, but we've been through this. It is for the good of us all.
I only care about my husband. He's got too good a heart. He should have said no to you.
I'm very grateful, added Leela. He's going to be a great help.
There are bad things out there at the moment.
The front door opened, then closed. A second later, a squat little man bustled into the room. Curly hair framed a happy face. Mr. Mika, too, was in late middle age. Leela wondered if it was possible to live in this channel and be anything else. She decided not to look in any mirrors, fearing that she'd see an older, more placid version of herself peering back at her.
Friends, friends, he said, hurrying over to them, somehow managing to simultaneously shrug his coat off and take their hands in his. He was trying to be welcoming, but there was fear in his voice.
Welcome, Councillor. It's a privilege to see you again. And you are Miss Fenwick? I do hope the tides are kind and we can help you.
He took his coat in his arms and scurried back out again. Mrs. Mika followed him.
Tides? Asked Leela. What does he mean?
Mr. Mika calls himself a fisherman, replied the councillor. He lets his consciousness fall into the memory seas and calls out to individual weave selves drifting there, so they can use him as a temporary platform to cohere around. And then they can speak to us.
Won't that harm them?
Mr. Mika couldn't harm anyone,
sang out Miss Limpstone as she bustled back into the room, a tray laden with teacups and a teapot rattling in her hands.
A little coherence, a few minutes' conversation, no damage at all. He's a rare talent, so kind.
She poured tea as she talked.
We've helped people whose loved ones have only just crossed over speak to them. And then those who choose not to become fetches, we can bring them back for a moment too. It's such a relief for the ones they've left behind.
Leela found herself holding a steaming cup of tea.
The truly dead are often so happy in their choice. And there are those who don't want to leave the sea, who just drift in all that data. Our guides. They're some of our closest friends, aren't they, Mr. Mika?
Mr. and Mrs. Mika came into the room together.
As we agreed, dear, he told her nervously. She pursed her lips. I've made my mind up. The Fetch Councillor needs our help. We must give it.
I'm sure it'll be fine, Eunice, said Miss Limpstone cheerfully, taking her place at the table.
She reached out and took Leela's hand.
You too,
she told the Councillor. Mr. Mika sat down and took the Councillor's other hand. Mrs. Mika sighed heavily. She went over to a side table and wound up the gramophone. The black disc on it started to revolve. She moved an arm with a little needle over it and dropped it. Piano notes tinkled out. Leela thought of sunlight sparkling on gentle waves.
Mr. Mika loves music, enthused Miss Limpstone. It helps him focus.
Strings kicked in, scratched across with static. A rich, deep voice sang about the sea. Miss Limpstone joined in, her voice reedy and thin, not always getting the lyrics right. Mrs. Mika sat down and took Mr. Mika's and Leela's hands, completing the circle. Then she too started singing. For a minute or so, Mr. Mika stared ahead, his face slack. Then he shuddered.
Ah, here comes our first visitor,
exclaimed Miss Limpstone. The gramophone music ground to a halt. The singer's voice elongating to bass depths and fading out entirely. Mr. Mika's face leapt into life. But it seemed that it was no longer his. Leela could make out another's behind it. It was like looking at a doubly exposed photograph. She thought of Dieter. Mr. Mika seemed much more in control. He opened his mouth and began to speak. The words that came were slightly out of sync with the movement of his lips.
"Hello,"
said a deep voice, thick with a heavy out-system accent. The head, no longer entirely Mr. Meeker's, nodded to left and right.
"Good friends."
It turned towards Leela and the counsellor.
"And to you, newcomers."
"We're looking for," started Leela, but Miss Limpstone shushed her.
"Don't break his concentration," she whispered.
This new version of Mr. Meeker chattered away, complaining about the weather.
"There's a storm coming. I can feel it."
Then his head fell forwards and his shoulders slumped, like a puppet whose strings had been cut. Another voice took him, this one a child's, then a woman's. They rattled out mundanities, but there was tension too, a subtle sense of upset. The child mentioned an imaginary friend.
"She won't play with me anymore. She's hiding."
The woman talked about nightmares.
"When I ran," she said, "it couldn't see me, but when I stayed still, it found me."
"Is he looking for Ambrose?" asked Leela. "He's moving through the dead, trying to track him down," replied Miss Limpstone.
Voice after voice shook through the medium, each a new personality, each sharing deeper, darker worries. Mr. Meeker was less and less himself, his face and body almost completely disappearing into each new identity. Mrs. Meeker held his hand tightly, gazing into his face. Leela imagined her as some kind of anchor, holding on to his root identity as so many others flew through him. The voices became a babble, running too quickly to make any individual words out. Leela was reminded of the blood and flesh plague, of the way she felt her own self dissolve. She felt fear grow in her. Then suddenly, Mr. Meeker howled,
"No!"
His face became entirely other. Ambrose stared out at her.
"Leela, no!"
"Oh, he's found your friend," chirped Miss Limpstone.
Chapter 20. Mrs. Meeker pulled Mr. Meeker's hand to her chest. She looked terrified.
"No!"
Ambrose shouted again.
"Leave me alone!"
Sweat beaded his face. There was a rip in his neck where he'd cut it open. The smile dropped from Miss Lumpston's face. Shock had silenced Leela. The counsellor nudged her.
"Ask him," she hissed.
Leela nerved herself.
"Ambrose," she stuttered, "do you remember the Shining City?"
"Go away!"
"It's very important."
"I can't help you. I can't help anyone. Let me go. I have to keep moving."
"The next two, Deodatus' victims," she made herself say. "The people you saw on Deta's wall. Who are they?"
Blood oozed from Ambrose's neck. Leela felt like she was forcing answers from a torture victim.
"You don't understand," wailed Ambrose. "They want to see if anyone comes to talk with me."
"Tell me, Ambrose, what are the names you saw on the wall?"
"Oh, no,"
whispered Ambrose.
"You made me stay still for too long."
The world changed. The little front room vanished. They were still in their chairs, still sat at the table. But now they were hanging in the deep sea. Light shafted down from above and lost itself in the endless dark beneath. Ambrose's voice was full of terror.
"No! They found me!"
Miss Limpstone gasped. She squeezed Leela's hand hard.
"Gods!"
she breathed, looking towards Mrs. Meeker.
"I told you so!"
Mrs. Meeker spat at the counsellor.
"We've been pulled into the depths!"
"Ambrose!" shouted Leela. "Tell me the names! I have to know!" "They'll be here!"
moaned Ambrose,
Any moment now, they'll be here.
There was a sense of something vast moving, a little way away, a sharp silhouette knifing through the depths, circling them.
I'm holding it off, hissed the counselor. It's already locked onto Ambrose, but I'm hiding us. Can't keep it up for long.
I'm going to crash us out, said Mrs. Meeker, pulling her husband's hand to her forehead.
God knows what this will do to him.
No, Leela said, then desperately to Ambrose. Tell me the names!
Blood poured from his neck, fanning out around him in a red mist. She could barely see his face.
Ambrose, please, she begged. Remember Dieter. It's all for him.
I can see it,
wailed Ambrose, looking past her.
It's found me.
Tell me the names.
Can't hold it back,
grunted the counselor. A slim grey shape hurtled towards them out of the gloom. Leela had a sense of it rushing towards Ambrose. She glimpsed sharp fins, a compound eye, a gaping mouth that was a nightmare of teeth. Then Miss Limpstone screamed again.
Gods help us,
howled Mrs. Meeker. The sea flashed into nothing. There was a moment of absolute void, and then they were back in the small front room. The circle broken. Miss Limpstone in tears. The fetch counselor repeating, fuck, again and again. And Mrs. Meeker hunched over her husband, who was slumped face forward on the table.
The names, asked Leela desperately. Did he get the names?
Ambrose might have dropped them into Mr. Meeker's memory, said the counselor. But we need to get them quickly before he forgets.
Get out, Mrs. Meeker told her. You could have sent him to his true death. Out!
But the names.
Fuck your names, said Mrs. Meeker. Then, Miss Limpstone, please recover yourself.
The counselor touched Leela's arm.
I think we better let it be, she said.
Miss Limpstone led them both into the hall.
Really? She said. Normally our guests are so well behaved. Poor Mr. Meeker!
Can you go back and see if he can remember the names? Asked Leela.
It's the only way I have of finding my brother.
I'm afraid that's up to Mrs. Meeker, sniffed Miss Limpstone. And you've brought trouble to her door.
Please, said Leela simply.
It's for the fetch communion too, added the counselor.
Her brother did a lot of work to protect us all.
We need the names to find him.
Well, since it's you asking.
She opened the door and disappeared back into the front room. Leela caught a glimpse of Mr. Meeker, his chin pressed into his chest, his eyes tight shut, rolling backwards and forwards as Mrs. Meeker leant over him. Then Miss Limpstone shut the door with a very emphatic firmness.
That was really Ambrose, wasn't it?
Asked Leela.
It was the closest we'll get before his rebirth.
And that shark? It was one of Ambrose's search engines. He told the pressure men about the back door.
They must have gone in through it.
I stopped it from seeing who Ambrose was talking to.
The counselor looked worried.
You need to be very careful. You can't let it spot you, any of you.
The safe house is insulated from the weave, and if we keep moving when we're out and about, we'll be safe. The sharks can only find you when you stop. The door opened again and Miss Limpstone emerged, holding a scribbled-on sheet of paper.
Mr. Meeker's a little better. We hope he'll be fine.
She gave Leela a pointed look.
No thanks to you, of course.
I can help him heal, the fetch counselor told her.
She held out the paper to Leela.
I'm not sure I should even give you this, but then it would all have been for nothing.
Leela took it from her.
Mrs. Meeker wrote the two names down for you. And now you've got them, I hope we never see you again.
Chapter 21. When Leela jumped back from the coffin drives back to the safe house, Cassiel and the caretaker were both asleep. She slept too. Her systems integrating startling new memories with older, more mundane ones. When she woke the next morning, the integration process keeping her out for longer than usual, she found Cassiel and the caretaker sat at the table in the front room. Cassiel's arms lay on either side of the box. Her hands had grown into a round, translucent dome covering it. Thin needles of nanogel reached down, moving inside it with careful precision. The caretaker looked up.
"We've got the top off," he said cheerfully. "Cassiel's having a look round inside. We wanted to wait for you, but we weren't sure when you were going to wake up again."
"Gods!" gasped Leela. "Be careful! Remember what happened to Dieter!" "We're safe," Cassiel reassured her, speaking slowly and deliberately. She was concentrating hard. "Learning from his mistakes, the dome insulates the box." "He had his defenses up too," Leela told her. "But his guard was down. He thought someone he trusted had already checked it out. I know it's lethal." Her needles twitched inside it. "I've taken every precaution. There's nothing to worry about." Leela joined them at the table and peered nervously down into the box. The dome obscured her view of the fine detail, but she could see that the box was hollow, with a smaller cube inside it, almost filling its interior. Cassiel's needles explored the space between its walls and the cube. One of the box's external faces had been cut open. Red gel and wires oozed out. "Found anything interesting?" "The red gel contains nano machines. They spin the wires out into a human victim's body, hard-wiring them to the box. They can also consume some or all of their host." Leela remembered the fallen mines that had attacked Cassiel. "What about you guys?" "The wires don't deploy. Our own nanogel resists them. I assume the embedded flies perform an equivalent function, allowing a full takeover of the infested body." The needles lifted up and out of the box. "The cube is hollow. I can detect movement within it. Flies, perhaps. But I can find no way of opening it." One of the needles became a sharp blade. "I'm going to cut into it."
"Are you sure that's wise?"
"You might remember how I recently held off an entire swarm, one guided by two fallen mines."
"Fair enough," sighed Leela.
The knife carved round the top of the cube,